Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HOURENERGY.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HOURENERGY.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
Buongiorno, and welcome back to another episode of Ferrari Nice. We're in Modena, we're wearing gorgeous suits, we're eating plates of pasta, and we are, you know, just dancing with the death drive. But I'm Katie Walsh, as you know. My partner, Blake Howard, is here. Say and hello, Blake.
Katie, if you come home after the maid again, I'm going to shoot at the wall. That's what's going to happen here.
Okay. Yeah. I know. It's my last warning. We have a very special guest today. His name is Max Cornillon. He is a freelance editor, a writer, used to work at the Museum of Moving Image in New York City. Great museum. But Max is a highly, highly requested guest from our One Heat Minute Productions operatives, because last fall, Max, you were tweeting some fun little tidbits about either Ferrari or Heat 2, and our fans would be like, who is Max? Who is Max? You guys got to get Max on the pod.
Who is this guy? How does he know these things? And it's such our Discord crew to like highlight someone, and then Katie and I go, huh, who is that guy? You know, who is he? Let's make let's try and have a chat with this person. Well, how do they know what they know?
It was interesting because we would get like tweets of different whatever Heat 2 casting, and we'd be like, that person's a joke, don't believe them. And then we'd get like something from Max, and we'd be like, that actually might be legit. So finally, we have Max on, and also we have discovered that Max worked on Ferrari. So that's why we're talking about Ferrari. Please welcome Max Cornillon. Say hello.
Thank you. Thank you. I'm thrilled to be here. And hopefully the mystery, unpacking the mystery, is more exciting than what it actually is. But I'm thrilled to be requested and to be here with you guys.
Well, we are thrilled to have you here. We know that you worked on Ferrari for a bit. So tell us about your role on the movie.
Yeah, I mean, it sort of came about unexpectedly. I've been a fan of Michael's for years, and I worked at the Museum of the Moving Image for a long time. And there's such a reverence for Michael and his films there. And that was extremely special. And just seeing kind of the audiences of the people who essentially listen to your podcast and kind of are out in the streets championing him, young and old. So it was cool to, for years, interface with those people and celebrate those films. And Eric and Edo, the curators at MOMI, again, are such fans and take a lot of attention and love into presenting Michael's films. So that kind of was the start of my journey with Michael, being at the museum. I'm sure I'd seen Last of the Mohicans when I was younger and in Collateral and certain things, but not putting the pieces together, but being at the museum kind of solidified that. So when I got the opportunity to join the editorial team for Ferrari and live in LA for almost a year.
Let's pump the brakes, because I just want our listeners to hear that the editorial team for Ferrari.
Yes.
Ladies and gentlemen. Yes. Excellent.
Yeah. So I was in post-production. I was not there for any of the filming, although we did some reshoots in LA and I was there for that. But I was, on the post-production team with the editorial team for Ferrari for almost a year, working under the great Pietro Scalia, who was an incredible force, definitely a legend. Great John Valerio, who people might know from his work on White Lotus, also an incredible editor, and just the entire editorial team for Ferrari brought their A game. And I mean, the stories are all true. That's what Michael demands, and that's what he gets. And yeah, everybody
Yeah,
showed up.
we've become friends with some of his former sound editors, and the stories that we've told about that we've been told about the process of working on a man film in post is like probably way more intense than the actual shooting itself.
Yeah. And also the idea of teams, because that's Michael's post, because it all seems to happen at once. He'll have round the clock teams. So huge editors. You know, I think my favorite one is Heat, which has four. I was lucky enough to speak to the great late great Pasquale Buber, but it was like him, Tom Rolfe, like you look at the editors, there's like four of like the best editors ever who were on a team, because one of them was working from like 8 to 5, and then the next one's working from 5 to 8, and then someone takes over in the next shift. And it's like they just work around the clock for 6 months to get the movie to get out. It's insane. So Max, tell us about your experience. This is one of obviously your we've had a recent guest of ours, again, one of those sound editors, Joseph Tsai, talk about Michael Mann University was his phrase that he used. So can you tell us about your time at MMU?
Yeah, I mean, it definitely was intense. This was sort of a different situation because we weren't working with a studio initially, and didn't have distribution while we were there was some international distribution set up, but domestically we were kind of working under the radar, working again, like Michael had funded a large part of this film, and so we were a smaller crew, so it didn't lend itself, luckily. Again, this was my first experience coming from kind of a curatorial side, critical side, to working directly hands-on with the film. It luckily wasn't a 24-hour production, even though we did have long days and nights. We were kind of a skeleton crew. It's sort of a mix of Mann veterans who had worked on projects like Miami Vice or Tokyo Vice, or even Black Hat, kind of a smattering of different experiences with Michael. So everybody was pretty tight-knit, and there were a number of fresh faces as well, where this was their first experience like mine. But it definitely was an intense experience, but very rewarding, very gratifying. And what I appreciated about it being kind of this smaller affair was that there was kind of a horizontal nature to it. I was fortunate enough to be brought into, again, having very little experience working post, being brought into kind of every facet of the film, and then working, spending weekends with Michael, just the two of us. And then those kind of things start to blend. It no longer becomes a Ferrari experience. It becomes that Michael Mann University where you're kind of driving through LA, getting tidbits, like he's pointing out landmarks, and I'm just kind of soaking in the LA history. Or we were working on at the Fox lot for a little bit, and just kind of like pointing out places, like, oh, here's where I first read the initial script for the Miami Vice TV show before it was called Miami Vice, and I came up with the name. And so it was kind of like an insane experience to be go from like sitting in a theater in New York, being like, oh, I love Michael Mann, to like, oh, I'm spending my Saturdays and Sundays with Michael, just doing whatever. Like, some of it is Ferrari related, others it's Heat 2, or even just looking at his archive and seeing, like, wait, Michael is extremely versed on science fiction. Like, nobody ever talks about this. Or there's some like Westerns in here that Michael has been wanting to make for decades. Like, I don't know. It sort of exploded my, perception of
This is
him,
the
because we think of
quietest.
him.
This is the quietest
Sorry,
Katie and I
I'm
ever are
just
because our
rambling, but
no,
it
please
was.
talking. But
Yeah.
I just want our listeners to know that we didn't leave. We're just gobsmacked.
Well, I'm literally, I was about to say, like, I'm speechless.
I
Like,
can't. I
talk
can't.
about MMU. I feel like people, like, you got paid to do this. I feel like people would pay for the
I will
experience that
pay.
you
I'm coming.
Oh,
I'm
totally.
coming, Max. I'll be your assistant. What are we doing
Yeah.
here?
But yeah, it just
That's
kind of
incredible.
exploded my notion of him as a filmmaker, as an artist.
It's just such a unique experience, like, for you to say, like, you're sitting sort of at the end of the process in the theater, in the curatorial thing, the retrospective screenings, and then suddenly you are in the car with him. You are in the Ferrari with him.
Quite literally in some cases, yeah.
Oh my God.
What's the car collection like?
The car collection is quite nice.
Quite nice is the nicest possible way to say
I'm trying to be modest
fucking
because
awesome. I just
Michael
want to
is.
translate for you to the listeners, because
Yes, you
that's
can
what
be
my
my
heart, that's what
translator.
my heart just said. I was like, oh, quite nice means so good.
There's quite the collection. Again, Michael likes his privacy, likes his sort of so I'm not trying to kind of dig too deep, but
No,
yeah,
we this is
it
an we know enough
we
about
know
him.
enough,
We
yeah.
know enough about him and fans of him. That's why I think so some of the crew that we've established, our little community that we've built, are so fascinated and intrigued by him, because on one hand, he's a filmmaker that comes with casts an immense shadow. And that's a shadow, a creative shadow of all these people that work with him. And some people, the intensity of, like, previous eras of filmmaking, sometimes it's too hard. They don't like the intensity, they don't like the 24 around the clock, largely driven by studio films. This film having a little bit more time to breathe creatively, having a lot more time to gestate, 20 years, having new and old faces mixed in, people who are looking forward to working with Michael in the cinematic space again. Sounds like it was an optimal thing. And also his family, he's quite private. He's like, he's kind of, it's only, I don't know, Katie and I talk about it all the time, but it's only in the last sort of really 5 to 10 years that people are like, we get our beautiful boys like Michael Mann Facts, bless you, if you're listening, and fans of his crazy Twitter. And you get these things where people are obsessed with him, but he's still a very private dude. He's a beautiful family man. He's got daughters. He's just a, he's a great guy. So we don't want to come over the top and get you to share anything that you would feel uncomfortable with, but it's just those tidbits are enough for us to savor. So yeah, please don't feel like you need to overshare or share anything that
Oh,
was in
of course.
confidence.
And we like, we've interviewed Mann. Blake has talked to him a couple times. I did a Q&A with him. So it's like, we know him. We don't want to like pry too much into the secrets. And obviously, if there's anything you can't share, but like, it is just, I don't know. I just think your experience sounds really unique and special. And I'm also like really curious to hear about what it was like working with Pietro. And like, I think the editing of Ferrari is like so unique and beautiful. And just like the way it deals with time and compression and expansion of time. I mean, I would just love to hear like what some of the philosophy of the edit was while you were working with these guys, these teams.
Yeah, because particularly time, like time as a sacrament. I've now since been lucky enough to acquire a neon, the neon box waiting for Ferrari to come out on physical media, on a Blu-ray. And I can't tell you, I think maybe I've watched, I haven't logged it on Letterboxd. If you could only log a scene, my Letterboxd would look insane. But like, I've watched the time trial, Maserati time trial while
Oh,
everyone's in
that
the
scene
church.
is so insane. So good.
I've watched that like 15 times, because I just want to, I want to look at the sac, I want to look at the sacrament of movie making time. And I'm like, God, that's elegant. God, these old masters just are, like, they get it some ways that, and do things in just such, with just such deft touch that you're like, these guys know exactly what they're doing. So please tell us if there's, philosophically, if there was anything, we'd love to sort of get you to share anything that you're comfortable sharing.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, editing, I think it gets sort of short shrift when we talk about film, because it's kind of a difficult concept to explicate, and kind of without material right in front of you, it's hard to kind of replicate that experience when talking about it. But Pietro is genuinely, I think, one of like the great masters working in cinema. I mean, we highlight directors, but I really think there are a number of editors working who understand story and craft better than just about anyone. And Pietro,
JFK
in
alone. JFK alone. Like, just
absolutely,
one item. It's enough. It's like, oh, you edited JFK? Okay, cool. You got a pass forever in this
And
community.
that was side by side with MMU was PSU, like working with him and his
yes.
just history with Ridley Scott and Oliver Stone, and yeah, the list goes on. But seeing, and Michael had been in pursuit of Pietro for years previous to them finally collaborating. But seeing, so when they came back from Italy, kind of, and we all started proper on the post-production, Michael's kind of directive to Pietro was to kind of work on these large dramatic beats, because for Michael, if the drama didn't work, the film didn't work.
Yes.
At the end of the day, it's not a sports film. It at the center is kind of like what Michael has talked about, this personality and this push and pull between work and home, and kind of the multiple lives that this character, this person lived. So Pietro, who could do both action and drama in his sleep, as we've seen Black Hawk Down, like kind of all these action-oriented films, Gladiator, etc. It really had to be rooted in the drama. So that was kind of the first phase or project of coming home from Modena and starting on the edit, was making sure that these moments really aligned, whether it's the ending, kind of these head-to-head moments with Laura and Enzo. And then, yeah, I mean, the set pieces, I think the opera was a big sequence, and the beautiful time sequence. Trial were kind of the synthesis between Michael's kind of steadfastness. Like, the movie didn't really change much from the initial assembly to the final cut that or the theatrical cut. Who knows if it's the final cut with Michael?
Don't say final.
I will never say final.
So, a couple of guys who are really friendly with online were like, "Hey, so I just picked up the Arrow Black Hat, and so can I finally delete from my DVR the original Michael Mann one that went on FX?" And I said, "Well, I would say yes, but one of our crew members went and mapped the 100 slight differences that the final director's cut has between that and the director's cut that went to FX. So no, don't delete it. Because yeah, now
it's
there's
an archival piece.
So now that yeah. So now there's four versions of Black Hat, just for anyone who are listening. Five if you include the Miami Nice cut. So the Hacker cut, sorry. Go on, please.
But yeah, so just to say that Michael, again, in your podcast interview with him, he mentioned kind of the tight constraints of filming, or 50 something days rather than kind of the typical like 70-ish days. So he came back from Modena like with a very specific vision of the film, and so the assembly didn't really change that. The edits changed, but the runtime, maybe we shaved off 10 minutes or so. This was kind of always pretty exact. So those big set pieces are kind of, like I was saying, a synthesis between Michael's exacting vision and also Pietro's kind of playfulness, his intuition dramatically, and then working on the register of time. Michael has this sort of phrase he likes to use in the edit called craft vanity, and avoiding it specifically,
yes,
making edits that feel too intentional, feel too cute or assembled. And I think that's why his films are so potent, because it feels like they kind of dramatically cascade through scene to scene.
Yes.
So
there's not a lot of fun, like Edgar Wright match cuts. The worst one, which is probably in one of the worst scenes, is when Wayne Grove goes to grab the young prostitute, and when he grabs her, the next shot is a beer cracking open its lid in a bar when he's trying to get more work. You know, that's kind of the one that I can remember so vividly, of like some kind of match cut between two things. But otherwise, it's very like poetic and seamless. Things just fly by. And obviously then the action or action-oriented editing is like so beautifully crisp and intuitive.
But I like how you say that they dramatically cascade. I think we talk a lot about like momentum, and it's the same idea. But yeah, I like that phrasing of it, that it cascades, because you sort of feel like you're falling into the story and you can't escape. And it's a nice feeling to have, to just be swept away by the storytelling and the filmmaking.
Totally. And like, again, I'm just going to keep calling back to your guys' interview with Michael, but that irresolution, like if you're putting too much of a bow on the end of a scene, it feels like the emotions or the images are resolved in a way, and the sort of entire intent behind the film and a lot of Michael's work is to kind of leave things unresolved, leave kind of the corners still rough, and so that you think about it as it progresses. It's like a accumulation rather than compartmentalization of something that can be tucked away. So that was a lot of the kind of editorial impetus behind what we were doing, is just kind of not making it too neat, not making it too cute, letting the drama really push things forward and leave things bubbling under the surface so that some of the catharsis of it could come out in the racing scenes. And those could be a little slicker, those could be more visceral. But again, the intention really was Michael wanted to make a classical film. He wasn't trying to reinvent this kind of biopic or this kind of period piece. He wanted to make something classic that could stand up, and felt like a different type of film in this climate, where every sort of period piece comes with some sort of gimmick or some sort of asterisk that feels like it's in on the joke, as if making a period piece is a joke.
We'll be right back after this quick.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HOURENERGY.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HOURENERGY.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
Break.
Yeah, I love how classical it feels, like every little detail, the costumes, the design, the like colors, it just feels like an old school film in a way that I found really refreshing and like nutritious almost, like fulfilling. Blake, sorry.
No, I was just going to say that there's something even in just the cups that he's using while he's like prodding. He's like lead engineer. He's like, "Where's your crew?" And he's like, "It's Sunday, Michael." Michael, that's probably a good Freudian slip. It's Sunday, and it's Sunday, and so like they're home with their families. He's like, "They're lazy," and it's like they've been here every day for 3 months.
Oh, the cups, the wine cups,
the wine cups. Not using classical wine cups, just using like an old cup to sip wine and watch it on an old TV out in sort of a garage. I just love that scene so much as well, because it's just that those two bouncing off one another. I want to know, Max, did you get a chance, because Bill Gaberi talked about Michael choosing to dub the film when he showed it in Modena. Did you get a chance to cast your eyes over like the Italian dub cut of this? Because I kind of am curious to watch it when I eventually get it on physical media to hear if there's an Italian dub version. I just want to see how it plays with subtitles, because yeah, Michael was very intent of like, I don't want people to be distracted with multiple different, kind of accents and stuff, like locally where they're here. I just want it to be dubbed in Italian, and they made the special effort to do that after Venice to make that happen. So I was wondering if you ever saw that.
I actually didn't.
Oh.
I wasn't really involved on that side of things, or that kind of came later in the stage
Yeah.
after I had left LA. But yeah, I'm very curious to hear it. And again, a lot of attention was made in for the all the audio, and sort of fine-tuning people's accents, and I mean, Michael is meticulous. I remember one day while we were mixing the film and the sort of first reel, which ends basically right before Ferrari is going to challenge Maserati's time. We were trying to get through that reel that day, and Michael's like down to the sound of the gravel as Enzo's walking through the graveyard. It was like, okay, we need to amplify the gravel this much, and kind of like it. So yeah, it wouldn't surprise me that Michael pays a lot of attention to the audio, especially a dub, because
yeah, that's got to be the most perfect dub of all time. I love that. How often was he watching it? Because we've heard that he would watch the whole movie every morning, but I don't know if he's still doing that, or if it's because this is a smaller team, you know, how frequently he's able to like watch the full cut and make notes every day or at certain intervals.
Yeah, I mean, it would not surprise me, and he probably did watch the film every morning.
Okay.
I've truly never, again, it blows my mind that he's 80 years old and we celebrated his birthday while making the film, that he is as sharp, as intuitive and hardworking as he is. I think he worked longer hours than literally anybody else and then woke up and, yeah, would watch the film and have a fresh set of notes ready. And Michael's all about his notes, and what's insane is we'll be several months removed from some comment he made, and he'll be like, well, did we ever address this? I think I wrote this down on whatever, November 15th. And then lo and behold, you go back through 4 or 5 months of notes, and there's that specific comment, and you're like, yeah, I guess we didn't address this, or we need to revert back to this.
Incredible. Oh my God.
Yeah. He this is why we do this. Superhuman.
Yeah.
Yeah. I know. It's just fascinating to hear that he is, because we've heard like he's such a hard worker. He works harder than everyone else. He's working longer hours than everyone else. He's watching the movie every day, but it's like he's got the two teams. But obviously, this was a different kind of production because it was independent until Neon acquired it. So it's like, he probably doesn't have the same amount of resources to do everything that he usually has done on other films, but the fact that he's still maintaining this really rigorous schedule and process is astonishing.
Yeah.
But
and I
you
think
know, what else are you going to expect? Yeah.
With this smaller experience, I think to Michael's credit too, he put a lot more on himself that maybe he would have had a longer timeline for, whereas he was doing this, he was also kind of thinking about Heat 2, and then when you get announcements like there's going to be another book and a new series and kind of other things, like I can see Michael just working for the next whatever 80 years again, even though that's not humanly possible, but it's like I saw him kind of bend time and space on a normal Tuesday to fit everything in. Like, why wouldn't he be able to just kind of cheat death and work for another lifespan? Yeah,
from your lips to God's ears.
Yeah.
But again, it also, like, he surrounded himself with a team that really cared, and we were all very dedicated to the vision. And when you see Michael working as hard as he does, that kind of makes you, again, like, not to jump on the Freudian slip, but when you have somebody charismatic leading a team, you kind of are willing to put life on the line to exact the vision and to achieve something special.
I love that. I mean, because we are always saying that like his protagonists are reflections of him, and he in interviews is always like, no, 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 no. But we still think it is.
Yeah, because he likes people who are, one of the phrases that he sometimes uses is like, I like people who are who are driven, but also are living the heightened experience of their lives. He wants to capture people in those heightened experiences of their lives. And it sounds like when Michael Mann makes a film, for all the people that are involved in it, yourself included, Max, it is a heightened experience of your life. You're like, I am more on than I've ever been, because this guy who is now 80 is outpacing everyone in every department, and he's got the whole thing on his shoulders. And that sounds really inspiring and really cool. And again, it sort of validates again this insane pursuit that Katie and I are on together. It's like, that's why the people are obsessed with him, because they're inspired by him in so many ways. And they see the filmmakers that are inspired by him, and his texts are inspirational themselves. So it's really great.
Yeah. I mean, you do sort of feel like an adrenaline junkie, both watching his films and working with him. I think it captures kind of a universal experience. And again, just because I'm talking about Michael a lot, I really do think his team in his office, as well as the people working on the film, were instrumental in this. I mean, Michael is kind of the seminal iconic artist, but he does have a really good eye for people, and people do really work hard in his service, not only because he's brilliant, but again, because the material is good and you just believe in it.
Tell us about the Michael Mann archive. I've heard about this thing so many times. The Ford Pass officers have an archive. We've even got crew members who've catalogued fastidiously all of the things that we at least have heard announced or heard being worked on or heard commissioned in times past. I know that I believe there's folders that are titled World War III in there from the original Heat shootout, because they had to map it out so crazily with architecture and all of the different obstacles that they were going to put in the people's way. So tell us about what it's like to kind of get to work there and see the whole archive and see, you know, imagine a different life with 10 more Michael Mann movies where there are Westerns and there are sci-fi movies and other action movies and things like that.
Yeah. I mean, that was kind of the first thing I geeked out on, being there and just getting to walk through it. I didn't even see the entire thing. Again, it's like sort of spread across LA, as you would imagine, with multiple fail safes, with kind of backups of backups. So I did
secret location.
Yeah, basically. I
love it.
Never destroy one copy. I saw both the
he's got more archive. He's got more archives than Neil McCauley had workplaces, you know, work garages with cars.
For sure. Yeah. I mean, there are safe houses to house all the prints and whatnot. That just ignites the imagination beyond what could be, but also what has been done. Like seeing models from Last of the Mohicans of buildings, kind of how they needed to be made, and he has a ton of little model work for set pieces, laying out rooms or buildings. So I mean, Michael is fastidious when it comes to research. I think he genuinely loves to do research, and we had cabinets full of Yakuza tattoos and stuff from his work on Tokyo Vice. And yeah, then the stuff that ignites the imagination is the shelf of Westerns that then have like folder names where you're like, oh my gosh, is this a thing? Like, could he be attempting to do this? And then a shelf full of sci-fi books. And Michael's a huge reader. I mean, there were a number of times where he would just be like, I need this book that he saw had come out, just so he could read it and kind of see if it pertained to a vision that he had had. And yeah, from Vietnam films to Westerns to sci-fi films to other gangster films. I mean, he has a huge list of projects that I think he's imagined over decades and still wants to tackle in many ways.
I'm imagining a heist film where a obsessed Michael Mann fan tries to break into the archive and he's like foiled at every turn.
Yeah, it's called My Life, Katie.
The Blake Howard story.
And if you think I'm going to fail.
And that he's pursuing it, you it, and he stops you at every turn.
It's not, we will not fail. I'm going to get into one of those things eventually.
So
I mean, truly, you could fill books, and hopefully his daughter, who works on a lot of the archive and preserves a lot of that material wonderfully, hopefully somebody eventually will put something together. I mean, it should be an exhibition somewhere.
Yeah, I was like the Kubrick show.
Yeah,
Yeah.
The Traveling Kubrick show, like that, that was such an amazing show. They had it at LACMA, and I mean, they need to do that somewhere in LA. So what were some of the other projects? I mean, like while you were there, like was Tokyo Vice coming out? Was Heat 2 coming, like the book coming out? Like, I mean, obviously I know that you can't share certain things, but like, you know, they're,
I think he's going to share something, Katie. He's going to tell us definitively that Austin Butler is not in Heat 2. Can we just definitively say that it's not happening to get all of these people out of our DMs?
Excuse me. I'm the number one advocate for Austin Butler as Chris Chehalis.
I know you're the advocate, but I mean, every second day someone's like, hey, you know, Heat 2 is coming. You know, it'd be great. Austin Butler. I'm like, yeah, guys, we've definitively covered that. We fantasy cast Heat 2 with an amazing crew of people who are both like, who are huge Michael Mann fans. And some people in the industries have got a bit more excitement and a bit more sort of wisdom about these sort of casting decisions. And it's like, if Michael Mann's making Heat 2, it's kind of like Quentin Tarantino saying he's making his last film. Like, it's going to have some really big performers and actors that are excited to be a part of it. So yeah, can you tell us any tidbits about Heat 2 that are not going to breach any kind of confidentiality that you know?
That's a great question.
How about this? So how far into it is it? Because we get the perception from the outside, he's obviously got the book. That's a huge benefit. It's his book that he's written. He's been researching it for many years. We know that he's got all these folders and got all this archival stuff that he's prepared for every character, which is a great resource for him to help he and Meg Gardner like develop the book. But can you tell us, like, at, you know, the how the pace is feeling, especially swelling, accelerating for, you know, pre-production and getting ready for this thing? Because I think so many of us are so excited that another cinematic Michael Mann is hot on the heels of Ferrari.
Yeah, so what I can say is that he was definitely working on the script while I was there. And in terms of casting, I won't confirm or deny any names, but there was sort of this rotating cast of people coming through the office attempting to pursue certain roles. And like us, I think everybody is anticipating this again, like what, I want to say like this is a send-off film, but again, Michael could work for another 80 years. And like I said, it wouldn't surprise me. So who knows if this is the last film or the second to last or whatever. But I think it still holds a certain weight in general. So there were a lot of people eager, both people that you expect and unexpected people attempting to kind of pursue those main roles.
I love that.
And what's funny is Michael, he just doesn't really care. Like, he cares about the film, but he's not starstruck. He's not like, he's not there to cater to people's whims. He's very personable and is always looking to speak to artists and kind of get people's perspectives. But he's not like, he doesn't want to court people. He's there for the work, and whoever's right for the work is the one who's gonna win out. And
right,
oftentimes Michael sees something in an actor that nobody else sees, and you see it translated to the screen and you're like, oh, that makes sense. But he's,
I mean,
very
Adam and Enzo, right? Like
Adam and Enzo, yeah. Which
one
you
of these things is
that,
not one of these things is not like the other just when you're looking at a headshot. But I can't imagine anyone playing Enzo other than Adam. He's amazing.
And Michael gets that out of people. But yeah, to sort of cap the Heat 2, I'm very excited. I was a little bit involved in maybe some early bit of that process, but I'm excited to see kind of where things go, especially as a fan. And yeah, just
knowing
how... You
think you're gonna... Oh, go ahead.
Well, just knowing how big of a production that is, how large of a project that is, balancing timelines, etc.
I was just going to say, I hope you get the call for Heat 2.
Yeah, man. I don't know if I could withstand the call for Heat 2. that would be thrilling, but also...
It's like life-altering.
It's, yeah. You fully have to commit. I have to, yeah. move to the triple frontier and become a new person and just give myself over to Michael.
You are Krisha Herless.
Yeah. Yeah, basically. Yeah.
This is the question that Katie and I are having. We are going to have to, I made a promise if Heat 2 ever comes to be a movie for a person who's abandoned, essentially going minute by minute, do you think I'm going to be able to avoid that? Do you think I'm going to be able to abandon the call of Heat 2?
No. Like, you can't do one Heat 2 minutes.
Yeah, I can, Katie. I mean, what are we talking about? What are we talking about? Who am I? One
I
Heat
think it
minute
needs to happen.
Has oh, gosh.
One Heat minute will come back. That's what will happen.
That's amazing. I'm looking forward to that because it is becoming a movie for sure. I'm just so curious, like, how the timelines are going to balance. Like, are they going to cast someone who can work in 87 and in 2000? Like, I don't know. Do we do double casting or is it just mostly focused on Chris in Paraguay? Like, I'm just really, really trying to figure out how they're going to pull this off.
I'm very curious. I'm very excited. I feel like we've got a huge opportunity to see different sides of things that we've seen in Heat from different angles and have these actors do stuff from the original. I think that's going to be exciting, like watching.
But I think it's going to be, I mean, obviously we're just speculating here. Like, I think he's going to do something, like he keeps doing different things every single time. Like he broke the aesthetic of Miami Vice, the show, to make Miami Vice the movie. Like Black Hat, totally different. Like Ferrari, he's making a classical like 1950s melodrama. Like I don't think he's going to give us like Heat. I think he's going to give us something totally different.
No, he's going to give us Heat too. Yeah. Well, I completely agree. Yeah, it's going to be different. And I feel like when you say science fiction and when you say Westerns and other gangster films, I'm like, there is, if there, so many of those ideas and tendrils and themes are like in the novel. Like you've got a great, like Borderlands, you know, you've got a huge Borderlands, you know, cartel section. And so it's like, this is going to be one section is going to be like Michael Mann's Sicario. And then it's going to be like back to Iguazu, you know, like back to the Ciudad Oeste, like from Miami Vice, we're going to have that whole section. And then you've got an opportunity to see a Chicago based heist crew. It's like, oh, well, that feels very Thief. It feels like this might just be a big, you know, a tapestry of so many different styles. It's got so much opportunity to play with that. And then if there's any references to the original, it's like the quintessential, I mean, I know he defies this. He calls all of his movies human dramas, which I think fits with Max's experience on Ferrari, but it's like it's, Heat is like top one of one LA movie. Like it's LA crime epic, you know, a different side that we've ever seen before. So, Max, what we're going to do here is we're going to deny our listeners any more of you for this moment. But I want to ask, can we talk to you again? We would love to. This has been so short because of Katie and I have got some scheduling stuff. So I just want to ask, could we A, talk to you again? But B, I want to say thank you so much for your incredible work and contribution and to being a part of the team that made Ferrari. And thank you so much for your time and your generosity and your ability to dance around details, which I know that you want to say but cannot in any kind of public forum, and may, if we develop a friendship, tell Katie and I offline so we can just be have our heads explode. But can we ask you to come back again and talk to us in more detail, because we'd love to sort of get out of the Ferrari of it all and talk about, you know, other man stuff, and especially, you know, your evolution as a man fan and where, you know, what you think are the best man films after working with him, because I think that would totally refract and reframe your perceptions of man films, because you've gone on to work on one, so that's going to change the way that you view others. So would you be able to come back and talk to us again?
Of course. That feels like such a loaded question because you guys are so amazing to listen to and talk to. So I would love to. I was a small piece of the puzzle, but definitely have a lot more to talk about. I mean, again, I spent so much time with Michael himself and got to hear just his opinions on his own films, other films. So
Oh my, that is a wealth. That is a pot of gold.
And you know what we say?
Not to be denied that Michael sort of sits in a tower waiting. He's very much like in the theater watching every single movie coming out. And definitely
that's amazing.
Yeah, so he's part of the community.
We've got a whole half an hour on you telling us what Michael thought of Avatar: The Way of Water coming up on the next.
I have those thoughts on hand, for sure.
I can't wait.
Those thoughts.
Guys,
thank you so much for listening.
Come back.
Thank you.
Yeah,
thank
we got to have you back. You're part of the crew now, Max.
Whether you like it or not, Max, it's over. Thank you so much, Katie. We've got to run. Max, we've got to run. Listeners, we've got to run. I can hear the exploding brains of so many of our crew right now, and I'm so happy. And so, Max, yeah, thank you for sparking so much joy for us
today.
Yeah,
thank you, Max. This was a great conversation.
Great combo.
So fun. Yeah.
We're looking forward to talking to you again.
Yes. See you guys soon.
We'll talk soon.
Talk soon.
Looks like you need a vacation. Enter the 5-Hour Energy Where Will the Tide Take You sweepstakes. You could win a $10,000 dream beach vacation. Imagine jet setting off to a tropical paradise, having fun in the sun, or diving at a gorgeous reef. It's up to you. No purchase necessary. Go to 5hetide.com for official rules and to enter. That's 5hetide.com. Enter today. Ends June 30th, 2024.